This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to Seagull Social, Season 3, Episode 42. My name is Maz. I'm joined by the boys, Ryan and Ben. And what a result at the Emirates. Call that a hat trick. It is three results in a row at the Emirates for the Albion. Massive, massive win.
3-0.
Three-peat. 3-0.
A three-peat Michael Jordan would be proud of. If you get it.
Nice segue, Ben. Love that. Well, boys, look, what a result. Let's start off with, as we always do, let's just get our little mini 30-second roundup of the game and then we'll get into it. So, Ryan, kick us off, mate. You were in the away end at the Emirates. What a day.
My voice has only just recovered. It's just mad, you know, because it's 20-1. I assume by now it would have been still a little bit bad, but it's all right. We're getting there now. But mate, my God, that has to go down as probably one of the best away days I've ever done, because to go to Arsenal, Emirates Stadium, the you know, media hype about Arsenal and the Emirates is such a special place and all that rubbish. And then you go
only this
there
season it's been a special
wins.
Place, by the way.
And then you win, get three wins, 3-0. Look, that is, you just can't write it, can you? I mean, we absolutely dominated him as well. I know the goals were a little bit scrappy, but look, I don't care, because we really deserved it on the face of the game. And yeah, absolutely. De Zerbi monster class, to say the least.
Yeah. And Ben?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll tell you what, the first half was it felt a bit cagey, because I think Arsenal had a few attempts, like they skim past the near post and that sort of thing. I was thinking, oh, they're guaranteed to score a goal. So when we scored our one, I was like, okay, I reckon we can actually get a draw here, because for some, I just had it in my head that Arsenal were still going to score. But that second half, we just, yeah, played them off the park, didn't we? We were phenomenal. It's actually insane that only on Monday we got battered by Everton 5-1. It's just, that's football. That's why we love the sport, because we were so abysmal and lost to a team that have been so abysmal this season. And then to flip it and then beat the Arsenal, who have been top of the league for 93% of the season, and to demolish them like we did at the Emirates is just, yeah, incredible. It was nuts.
Yeah. I think that for me was the biggest thing. It was, yeah, going from getting battered 5-1 at home to Everton to then going to the Emirates and putting on that kind of performance. I think that just shows, again... Let's talk about that comment. Obviously, the quote from De Zerbi. You will see the true Brighton, and mate,
all-timer.
He backed up the talk. That is an all-timer. And what a way to do it as well. So let's get cracking, boys. Straight away, it was a bit of a feisty affair. Before we get into the game, actually, the 11, the Brighton 11, because he made three changes. He brought in Gilmore, Ferguson, and Colwill back into the starting 11. And for me, when I saw the starting lineup, I was troubled. And I messaged you boys in the group chat saying, oh, what a starting 11 that is. Like, I was really happy with it. And I think Gilmore and Colwill especially, I thought Ferguson was a bit, I think he's still lacking a bit match fitness in my opinion. I think he was a little bit off it. He played well, but I thought he wasn't really up to his usual standards. But I thought Gilmore and Colwill were brilliant. And Ryan, start with you. The impact that Gilmore and Colwill had on the game.
Oh, they're quality. They're just class, you know. They're just ooze class. Colwill was exceptional yesterday. Probably the best game I've seen him in for us so far. He was fantastic.
Since the last time we played at the Emirates.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
Yeah, he was unreal. Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't really tell you anything he did wrong. Him and Dunk as a partnership is you know, really, really, really good. And everyone knows how much, you know, we love Levi, and I really, really would love him to stay, as much as it does seem difficult to accept that he'll probably go back. But yeah, he's an absolute machine, mate. And Gilmore the same. I thought the sort of 65, 70 minutes he played, he was really good. I was quite surprised when he came off, actually. I said it to my dad at the time. I was like, oh, you know, why is he taking Gilmore off, bringing on Welbeck, especially when we're 1-0 up? And that just goes to show, what do we know?
That's why.
I was about to say, I think that change was actually really key. And you know, I always talk about Welbeck and stuff, but I thought he actually really changed the game, and he actually stretched the Arsenal defence differently to what we were doing before. So yeah, and Ben, just quickly on Gilmore and Colwell, what kind of impact do you think they've had on the season so far?
Well, it's short but sweet, I guess. Obviously, Colwell's had more of an impact, but I think since Gilmore's come in, he's been brilliant, hasn't he? Which is a very, very pleasing to see going into next season when/if we do lose Alexis and Mac, like we say every single pod. Yeah. Colwell's amazing. It actually makes me so sad thinking that we could lose him. And obviously, well, sorry, not sign him on a perm. Because the money that they're going to ask for.
Ben White and Leeds, Ben.
No, because the money that they're going to ask for is going to be, it's going to be big, the money they're going to be asking for. It depends if we can shoehorn, it depends if we can, I saw some reports yesterday, if we can shoehorn a Caicedo or an Alexis into the deal to get Colwell. I know it's not FIFA or Football Manager, and those deals don't normally tend to happen, but if we can say, look, we'll prioritise and give you Caicedo or Alexis, as long as we can have Colwell back, I'll be a very happy man, because yeah, he is brilliant and he's got so much promise. If we do get him, I just see it of him being like a long-term Brighton player. If like replacing Dunk, taking over from that role and just playing for us for many years to come. And I pray that we do. Yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm. Then on Ferguson, I think, obviously he's building sharpness again. I still think he's done really well. There was that moment where he was on the edge of the box, literally like out-strengthening Gabriel. I just think you forget he's 18, 19 years old and he's just, he can bully centre backs, which is just unbelievable to see. So God knows what he's going to be like. He'll be a different beast when he's a bit older.
No, definitely. Mm. And with regards to the beginning of the game, it was a feisty one. Like the first 10 minutes, a few tasty challenges, notably Martinelli on Matoma.
Send them off.
Yeah, Ben, we'll start with you on this one. I personally thought it was. I don't know how he didn't get a booking, let alone. It definitely was dangerous play. Like, you could even argue with red card. I think red card, I don't know personally if red card was a bit too much. I don't know. Ben, let's start with you. What were your thoughts? Was it red? Should it be at least a yellow?
As a Brighton fan, I was screaming for a red, of course, but it should have been a card. A yellow, like, I would have gone, okay, early in the game. I know that's like an unwritten rule, isn't it? Try not to send someone off in the opening 5 minutes, but it kind of is that. It kind of is that way. Yeah, it's very dumb. Yeah, dumb unwritten rule. But the way he like jumps in, I know he's looking at the ball, he's not looking at Matoma, but it's the fact that he like leads almost with his elbow, and that's where Matoma's head is. So it's just, I don't know if he's done it intentionally, but it's just clumsy. And obviously clumsy challenges can end up really, really hurting people. So it can end up being super dangerous. So I'm all surprised that he got away with not even getting a single card.
Yeah, no, 100%. And Ryan?
No, I agree. I think, it's definitely bordering orange card. Yeah,
I think orange is bang on.
It is literally in that. it's got to be in it because, yeah.
Give him a sin bin.
Had that been the other way around, I'd imagine he probably would have got sent off, because that just seems to be how the Premier League works. The fact that not only that one, I mean, that's a yellow, definitely. It was right in front of me as well as it happened. I was like, my God, he could have knocked him out doing that. And as I say, if it was the other way around, I think it would have been. And, you know, so many times Arsenal, I mean, don't get me wrong, we had our time wasting at the end, and I did. And I was like, you know what, if we can't beat him, join him. We're on the end of it every single week, screw him. And I must admit, the first sort of 45, there was so much time lost. It was driving me mad. Every single game, there's so much time lost. I feel like a broken record saying
there was 8 minutes, though, to be fair. 8 minutes added on, to be fair.
Yeah, that was second half, though. First half was five.
Oh, you mean first half? Right, yeah.
Yeah, mate, first half, we lost so much play. And I was just thinking, oh, my goodness. And I thought it was going to be one of them. We're on the end of it again. But, second half, don't get me wrong, we joined in a little bit. And I respected it in the end, because I was like, do you know what? We're on the end of it every single week. And it's a shame, because the game is that now, isn't it? Everyone just time wastes and dives and cheats. I wish it wasn't so much, but yeah, we got what we deserved.
Exactly.
Obviously, Marseille did get sent off, but because of what he'd done, he ended up having to go off anyway, which was quite poetic itself.
Caicedo, obviously, the challenge on him. And then do you see after, he high-fived
Soma.
Yes, I love that. That's cold. Also, just quickly, this has really been bugging me for a while now, right? Matoma, am I right in saying he wears like a gum shield? Because I swear,
sometimes he does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe he's got Invisalign.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because I've always noticed like he's got like his lip sort of looks more inflated. Mm. And I remember.
That's the reason he's so shit, mate.
Yeah, it's got the gum shields. It was. I mean, I was thinking it was either gum shields or snus. But definitely gum shield. Then, of course, Martinelli had to go off because of Caicedo's challenge.
It wasn't as bad as people were making out, I don't think. Let's talk about, be fair, talk about Caicedo's one. But I don't think it was as bad as people said. It looked like he came from behind, but it was the angle, I guess. It's not like he really, really hurt him. Like, he went down the back of his leg. Somehow, he's obviously been forced to go off, which then obviously can.
Martinelli's leg got caught and twisted. I think it's the angle it went in, his leg sort of got twisted in it. That's why he had to come off.
Yeah, as Rama? I was going to say karma. But as Ryan said, it's sweet karma. So, yeah, he went off. They might have gone down to 10 men, but at least Martinelli had to get off in that one. Yeah. Not saying I wish injuries on anyone, obviously. But
I was going to say, yeah, bloody hell. Then that meant, obviously, Agent Trossard came on, which was great.
What a game you had, mate.
Unbelievable. So, yeah.
He did hit the bar, though. Do you remember?
Trossard did hit the crossbar, which I thought, if that had gone in. Let's talk about Trossard. Obviously, his impact on the game for the second goal we'll come on to. But just quickly, what do you think of his performance, Ryan, yesterday?
Oh, mate, it was so good. Probably one of our best players, I'd say, to be honest with you. I think as soon as he come on, right, I wanted to sort of measure the away end. Because I said on that AFTV video that I wouldn't boo him, I'd probably clap him. And I stuck...
There was a lot of boos, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was.
I didn't clap him. Yeah. And as soon as everyone booed, I was like, do you know what? Yeah. Yeah, okay, I'll do the same. So yeah, I did boo him as well, to be honest.
I was going to talk about this. So yeah, like, our good friend Josh Akers messaged me saying, why are they booing Trossard? And I was like, I think it's mostly because of the way he forced the transfer through.
Yeah.
And he also didn't turn up to training, didn't he?
He fell out of Lallana, or something like that.
And he left the country, do you remember? He left the country and didn't turn up for training.
Left the country? Yeah. Why was I clapping him? What was I on about? Yeah. Forget that guy.
It's because the reason why other fans reacted like that is because they don't actually know those ins and outs. I don't think they were widely reported that much. It was only within Brighton Twitter. It was only within that Brighton Twitter. I don't think Fabrizio ever said he forced a move out or anything like that. It's only what we know from obviously the local sources that we have and being on Twitter and that sort of thing. I can understand why people would think, what a Tim Port club by booing him, but we had our reasons and they're factual. Sure.
No, exactly.
And I think what's quite funny is, sorry, just to say about Trossard, is as soon as he come on, I think it was literally his first touch and it goes out of play. He miscontrols it and it comes off the pitch, to which the whole away end goes, way, and all this sort of thing.
He wasn't doing too bad, though, that first half. I don't think
I was scared of him.
And then obviously, if that did go in, when he hit the bar, he was at the away end. I can imagine him running out to the away end and doing that. Could you not? Because surely he would have.
I don't know. I don't think he would have, you know. I don't know. I think he still respects us, I think. Maybe not now after we booed him.
I think going
into the game, I think he did have respect for us because he achieved a lot with us and like he was one of our good players and I think he had a good relationship deep down. But I know it ended sour.
Part of me thinks he would have just because he was booed and then obviously if he scores after that, the motion maybe gets to him.
If he did that, I would have booed him wholeheartedly.
I would have said fair play. You don't say fair play to that.
Would have broken us all.
Instead of doing this, we're all just doing that.
let's going on to the first goal. And I want to talk about something just away from the first goal, but he was very instrumental
goal
in
the season.
First goal. Mitoma, obviously done Ben White, who then provided to Estupiñán. It provided to Estupiñán, who then crossed it for Enciso. But before we get onto the actual goal, of course, Mitoma versus Ben White was a very, very enjoyable battle for us. It was a mismatch, yeah. And also, going into the game, I think we were all be on the same page on this, I think, with regards to Matoma's performances, probably from around the FA Cup semi-final up until yesterday. he was a bit under par. I think we can all agree that we didn't see the best of Mitoma. And he sort of, you know, everyone was saying, was it a purple patch? Was it, you know, is he done? Is he a fraud? All these things.
Last week he was quite good.
Yeah,
I think, but who did we beat? United, he was good. And who was the one before?
Not Everton.
6-0. Oh. The Wolves game.
Oh, 6-0. The Wolves game. Yeah, yeah. But I think to the standards we held him to, I think some of the games he was a little bit below par, and there was a few games where we were a bit like, has he sort of, you know, gone through that? But I think yesterday showed very, very clearly that Ben White as well, we can't disrespect Ben White because he's been one of the best defenders in the Premier League this season. And he made him look genuinely subpar slash sort of mid-table type vibes defender, maybe a Crystal Palace vibes. But yeah, let's start with you, Ryan. Ben White, Mitoma, that was a great battle for Mitoma, really. And Ben White was in a lot of trouble. Talk to me about Matoma's performance.
Oh, he was fantastic yesterday. He's quality. I think it's the hair colour did it, really, to be honest. But no, he was so good. It was good to see him on his confidence. And when he takes on players, you just fancy him, don't you? I think he did it a few times against United at Wembley before it sort of went quiet and everyone... I still don't agree with that Aaron Wan-Bissaka thing, because I thought only second half he really got pocketed. I thought first half he was quite good against him, really. And I think that when he goes down to the byline, hugs it really, really tight and then sort of knocks it past his man... It's such a good move, that.
It was that moment, I remember, was it in this first half, I want to say, where he stopped Ben White, stood him up, like, one-on-one, and then Ben White thought he was going to turn back inside, but he actually turned him the other way and just breezed past him, and Cissé had that chance, remember, in the first half.
He reads him so well. I mean, he reads his man so well, because he sort of analyses him, doesn't he? Goes off, if he's going to go lean that way, he goes the other way. I mean, it sounds so obvious, doesn't it? Because there's no, like... crazy skill moves that he uses. It's just elite ball control, and it's so good to watch, to be honest. It's
the funniest part is when they've done a slow-mo of it, and you can see Ben White, as soon as the ball goes past it, Ben White just goes, absolutely done. There's no way I'm going. But you know what? We actually saw glimpses of that battle when we played them back in, when was it? In December.
On New Year's Eve.
And we saw that Mitoma White battle when he got the better of him and actually scored, didn't he? Yeah, he scored, and then I think he had one disallowed by VAR. So we saw, I remember that in the back of my head before the game. I thought we could have some fun down that side because Ben White couldn't handle him then, and maybe that would be the same. And it was, he had his pants down, didn't
he? And he was very important in that first goal, who obviously, done Ben White and then gave it to Estupiñán, who then great crossed in Cissé. And it was very weird because I know, Ryan, obviously you didn't have this privilege, but we were watching it on TV and the commentary was so bizarre.
Yes,
because
I heard this.
When the goal went in, Martin Tyler just goes, and in Cissé turns it in. And I was just like, are you... is that all? It was just so... It felt like... But I think maybe,
if anything,
I don't know.
It's a shame for these big... Like, the big media. They love Arsenal. They love Arsenal, Leeds and Brentford. Those are the ones that are like... They just can't get enough of them, can they?
And whereas Peter Drury's like, the Paraguayan jewel comes to the Premier League. Yeah. Tears at the bridge. Tears at the Emirates. Phenomenon. Like, and you just, it's all poetry. Yeah,
but it was very
subdued.
And
then Martin Tyler's just so boring.
I don't know, it was because it was, there was a bit of a potential VAR thing. I don't know if people were saying it potentially VAR. But yeah, I don't know. Ben, what do you think of the first
Martin
goal?
Tyler was like, the Arsenal team go to the referee, surround the referee. And then whilst just thinking, how do you have the job still? Like, you've done brilliantly this in your career, but just it's time to go. I don't know.
Right,
was
Mike,
it? I don't think it. Oh, is it going to be bad? I don't think it was a foul. Evan Ferguson wasn't looking. He kind of comes closer to Evan Ferguson. I don't know, it's not really like a challenge. He puts his foot on his boot and his boot comes off,
doesn't it?
But so it's a bit sorry for a centre back to go down whilst you're still under mad threat in that position. To go down and touch your ankle is embarrassing. Like, no centre back or no player should really do that when your team's in a really, really dangerous spot like that. To go down as soon as you've had like a little scratch down your ankle. It's stupid. And he's let his team down there because he probably would have won the header because Cissé was like 5'2" and Kiwi was in front of him.
I think if that was given as a foul, I think it would have been super ultra soft.
Yeah.
I think the referees made
But not surprising, knowing VAR this year, to be honest.
Exactly. Anything else on that goal, or do you want me to move on to the second goal?
I'll say a little bit just because it was such a good moment, wasn't it? And I think, yeah, it's such a scuffed sort of ball in from Estupiñán, and it sort of bounces over, and then Julio's there, he sort of flicked it, but he had to be there, right? And it was a good moment because he comes up to us, he does this as well. I love that celebration. I think he did about four celebrations. He did that.
Yeah,
one of those as well. He loves it. He absolutely loves it. And I think that's why I like him so much, because he's just so raw, isn't he? So natural. Mm. There's nothing felt false about Julio. And I think that's what makes him such a great little player.
That goal reminds me of when you used to play headers and volleys in the park. You'd always have that one jammy kid that would always hover around the goal and just get some little tap in when someone does a decent volley.
Yeah, literally.
That, and then running off and he's won the World Cup.
That's a great shot.
My left leg or something.
On in CISO, because I tweeted about this, and I don't know. I think apparently someone said it was cramp, but I don't doubt it was. He actually started crying before he came off.
Yeah, I didn't know how it was.
Do we know how serious the injury is?
Well, when he came up to the away end at the end, he had a big ice pack on his leg. So I don't know, maybe something had swollen. Or to be honest with you, his legs look gone anyway. I've got to be honest, when I think he brought off Ferguson, I thought he was going to bring off Julio, just because I could see his legs were gone at that time. So I think he just run himself into the ground, to be fair. So hopefully it's just a bit of wear and tear.
I think he's just emotional because of the result, and maybe just wanted to play even more. He seems like a very emotional character, doesn't he? He cried at Stamford Bridge when he scored and we won. It just seems like a very emotional person.
He's very raw, I'd say. He's a good lad. He seems like a good boy. You know, he's not one that you can see him being, I don't know, some sort of idiot or anything. He just seems like a good boy. I hope he stays that way, because I think that rawness when you're sort of a 18, 19, 20-year-old footballer from South America, I don't know what it is, there's just something about it that's so enjoyable to watch, and having one yourself now, it's just like, you just love it, don't
having
you?
Like five of ourselves, and then we got on five, Pedro soon.
it's so good to watch.
Nah, incredible. And then going on to the second goal, Adrien Trossard, of course, came into play. It was great. His assist. Obviously, crashed the ball into Pascal Gross. And then the ball landed to Undav, the lob specialist, we're going to call him now.
He's taking Daddy Welbeck's title,
isn't he? Literally, every time he sees a lob, it's like, it's showtime. puts on the thing. And it's just incredible how good he is at finishing. And I think you mentioned it, Ryan, yesterday, how clinical he is. And I think that's the key thing for me is, without trying to shit on him or anything like that, because I think he has got the makings of a good player. His general play, I think, lets him down at times, but his finishing...
Yeah, 100%.
His link-up play, everything's getting better, but his finishing is second to none. I think we've seen that now on multiple occasions. Like, you look at Wolves, the finish at Wolves, the finish at Arsenal.
During the friendlies as well, beginning of pre-season, he was getting a lot of goals, just because I know, obviously, it's a lot less intense, but, to be able to score a goal is an instinct. You can't really teach it, can you? You know what I mean? So I think that we said it early then, was he hit shots hard, he hit some low into corners, or he's very good at dinks. To be able to pull off those two types of shot means that you're a good finisher, and it's so rare to have one. So if we can just keep him in and around this sort of 18-yard box when you've got these moments, he's going to be so big for us.
I find it funny, even when Gross isn't trying to assist, he somehow manages to get an assist when it deflects off him and goes over to him. He's relentless, that bloke. He's always assisting. Yeah.
Also, Ben, question for you here. How important or how much do you think Undav next season will be involved? Obviously, I know how Pedro isn't an out-and-out striker, and I know there's going to be players coming back. You look at Sima yesterday, scored a brilliant goal last night for Angers. Sima coming back, we've got Shaqiri coming back. We've got a lot of attacking options coming back, basically. Adingra. Do you think Undav will play a big part next season, or do you see him maybe stepping out alone, or do you see him battling for a first-team place?
I think from what we've seen, this back end of the season, I think he warrants to be... remaining in the squad for next season for sure. Whether he's number two or number three, I imagine Welbeck's still got another season in him with us, especially if we get into Europe. His experience with James Milner and Lallana will be so key. I can't see why not. I would like him. I can't believe the words are coming out of my mouth after what I've said about him previously, but I want him to stay for sure. I don't want to see him go out on loan. I definitely see him as a number two for sure.
Yeah. And do you echo those thoughts, Ryan?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I liked him then, didn't I? I said I liked Undav. I think he was just really, really, really low on confidence. I think confidence is so important for number nines, you know. I think to be able to have him scoring now, I think that De Zerbi's just that guy that players seem to play for. He's got a good way of putting his arm around when you need and also kicking you up the bum when you need to as well. So yeah, I'd keep Dennis around. As you mentioned, we've got so many abroad at the moment. And also in this country, we've got Raider Kadra as well, who looks like a really good player. I think he's only about 21, 22. We've got obviously João Pedro coming in, who's going to be very good for us. We've got Abdallah Sima, who I think has gone really under the radar this season, doing so well for probably one of the worst teams in France. So, you know, these players coming into our team, it's a team that's ready for them and ready for them to get better in. So if they're doing well in these lesser sides, it only makes you a little bit more excited. And they're still young and got quality. So, yeah, I could keep Ndav around. But it's reassuring to know that all of these players just keep getting, you know, better. And there's no sort of worry about who's going to flop.
And just on that, Ryan, it's brought me on to actually nicely because there's been this debate, right, where people, well, a lot of casual fans have been saying that De Zerbi brings the best out of this Brighton squad and that Brighton players, that our squad is pretty average, but De Zerbi puts them onto another level. Yeah. What do you think of that? Do you agree with a bit of that where, like, De Zerbi's bringing the best out of the players, which I think is a case, but would you agree that they're average players that are playing really well?
This is just as stupid as the Southampton comparisons, because when you look at last season, it's consolidating, it's building. If you look at the season before, it's consolidating and building. What Potter did was really good because he built the foundations in that 16th place season where we were so good and we probably deserved mid-table. And then the following season where we could have even pushed for Europe if it wasn't for that blip in January. And then we have another one this season where we're looking like we could even get Europe now, probably should do. And, you know, it's every year we've made that steady progress. So I don't think that there's any reason to suggest that anything of that time with different managers, players leaving, that they're getting any worse or that they're below par. It's just such a lazy opinion. It's just people making up narratives because they don't like the fact that a small club are getting better. And unfortunately, this isn't one that's going to go away as much as people want it to be and want it to be a Southampton and want to create their own little agendas. It's not true, because if you can see the club where we were in 2020, 2019, when it all sort of started, it's been foreseeable for a few years. And the last team to do that were Blackburn when they won the league very long time ago. And also Leicester when they won the league. Unfortunately, their circumstance was foreseeable because they didn't replace. Whereas we're doing that. And that's what's got us ahead of the curve of the Leicesters and ahead of the curve of the Southamptons.
On the flip side, when I was on the overlap, Carragher was like, there's only so many times you can replace before one of the replacements doesn't work out. And there's obviously some merit in that argument.
That works for every single team in the world, though, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah,
every team in the world.
But the thing with Leicester, and I should have said it to him, is like, they got so many replacements wrong. You can probably get away with maybe one or two, but when you literally, you mean they still got Vardy playing there, and obviously he's a great finisher or whatever, but they still haven't replaced him after all of these years. So that's where they've gone wrong. Like, yeah, we can get away with making one or two mistakes.
Yeah, I think where it all rolls back, and I think we've said this so many times, is Tony Bloom. I think it all stems back to Tony Bloom and how he navigates us through these next couple of seasons. Because, yeah, look, it's inevitable. We're going to come onto it. We're going to lose key players. We're going to lose the likes of McAllister, Caicedo. These top players, of course, they're going to be lured by the Real Madrids, the Liverpools, the Man Uniteds, you know, like these big illustrious clubs with rich history. Of course, we can't compare to that, little old Brighton and Hove Albion. But in saying that, we've got someone at the helm, or someone at the top who has got a vision for this club, has got all the analytical tools, all the things to disposable. And I think the key thing is he cares so much about the club. And I think to have that, someone at the top, I think that's really key going into these really, I think, testing years now, because I think it is not make or break, but it will really, I think, shape the next 5 to 10 years of this football club, is how we now deal with replacing players, the infrastructure, all those kind of things that we see behind the scenes. I think Tony Bloom is going to be so pivotal to guiding us to either being the next, I don't know, big club, or going down the route of Southampton/Leicester. But
the thing is, people don't want to say these things because they're like, you know, oh, it's Brighton. You know, I think that's what everyone always is like, because they're just jealous that their club can't do the same. And I think that ultimately it was, you're right in saying it's down to Bloom. And it was, who was it at the beginning? It was Ben White's going to go and you're going to fall apart because he's your best defender.
Yeah,
Cucurella, you know, your player of the year. Basuma's going to go, it's all going to fall apart. How are you going to cope when you lose these players? How are you now going to cope when you lose McAllister? How are you going to cope when you lose Caicedo? It's like, yeah, but these players that, you know, Caicedo wasn't even thought about, but, you know, no one even knew him, like, last January. And he was the one that no one knew. Whereas in McAllister, no one even batted an eyelid about McAllister for the World Cup. And if he didn't play in the World Cup, and they didn't win it, still no one would care. Everyone knew he was probably our player of the season up until then. And he probably isn't now. And I think that's what's, like, more crazy, is that then he was our player of the season before the World Cup. Now he's probably not. And in that time, people rate him higher than they did then. And that goes to show the lazy opinions of this football club that people have outside of it, because they simply just don't understand.
Mm. I feel like McAllister has been overhyped because of the World Cup. He's still a really good player. I think the people on the outside, which is fine because it will make us more money, but he's been well overhyped simply because of this World Cup. The media absolutely love him, don't they?
Yeah. We'll get on to that a bit more, the Caicedo and McAllister thing. But just quickly, let's round off the game. 3-0, obviously. The Welbeck drive, who came on and made a difference. Undav's shot, which then Ramsdale parried to Estupiñán, who had a bit of a scuff shot. Yeah, happy birthday. His first official Premier League goal, because, of course, his last one got ruled out. A bit of a scruffy goal, but, I mean, a goal's a goal, and it rounded off a beautiful, beautiful evening in North London. So, Ryan, just quickly, do you want to, your thoughts on the goal?
I must admit, I thought when Undav shot, I thought that was going in. I thought it was going to be one of them where he hits another one. It comes back out to Purvis. And I'm happy for him because he was so good yesterday. I mean, he probably has been one of our best players this season. He's been absolutely fantastic, inverted, bombing it down the left. He had everybody on toast yesterday. Whoever was in his path, he dominated. And he capped it off with a goal. Okay, it probably wasn't a worldy goal that you want to score, but you got to score them goals if they're in front of you. And it was a good finish as well, considering looked over.
Yeah, when you hit it into the ground like that. It's always a decent finish.
Yeah. I suppose that sort of rounds up the game as such. But just to talk about some club records, boys. So I don't know if you saw this yesterday at all, but
I love that, yeah.
This is the most points we've ever accumulated up until this point. Of course, there's still four games to go. 58 points. We've won 17 games, again, club record in the top flight. We've scored 66 goals, which again is a record in the top flight. And the most away wins of 8, again, a club record. So we've smashed
it's
still four games to go, and we smashed four club records, all very key ones. So I think that just shows the absolute development that the Zerbi, the club, big round of applause to everyone involved, because the players, the manager, the people at the top, I think have just guided us to, our best ever finish. It looks like, I don't want to jinx things, but I think it's our best ever finish the way we're going at the moment. Was it ninth last season we got?
And in doing so, we've built a squad that's so likeable. You know, we've built a squad that feels really close to us. It's the first time that we've been able to say that in such a long time. You know, a squad that we feel genuinely a part of. And Levi and Lewis Dunk yesterday, they're absolutely loving it. You've got Julio and Purvis Estupiñán coming up to us. Undav giving his shirt into the crowd, or whatever he was doing.
Yeah, was that his dad that was so in the crowd?
That was Shyamalan. What's his name? The fan? Paul Shyamalan, I want to say.
What, the older guy?
Yeah, the older guy. Yeah, he's basically, I think he's like a really famous Brighton fan, I think, or he was part of basically keeping us alive back in the 90s, 80s.
Mad.
Yeah, when we were going towards extinction. Yeah, that's what, I'm not 100% sure that's him. I'll find out the exact name, bear with me. You guys keep talking.
I was just going to finish up with it anyway. It's a likeable club. I don't know about you, Ben, but it's the first time since the Championship. I know we've said it so many times, the 16-17 season, like, couldn't be topped. But I do think that this is the closest sort of vibe, and it beats last season. I know we had all those great away days or whatever, but these away days have been resulting in not only wins, but, you know, you've got more players that are, I don't know, they're just loving it, aren't they? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, 100%. And I just love seeing the full-time celebrations, like, especially in the dressing room, stuff like that. Seeing all the players just absolutely loving it. Yeah, you can just tell. I think, is it better than that season that we always go back to? Obviously, it's a completely different... No, I mean, like, just as in, like, the togetherness, I feel like it maybe is. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's hard to compare, or we shouldn't compare, because they're both great in their own way. But, it's just so nice seeing them all together. Like, when... And
we're on our way back
dressing room. Have we? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And then when Undav was in the dressing room, like high-fiving everyone with Jason Steele, you think that looks so good. And also the spread, all the sandwiches and stuff like that they had.
Yeah, that looked unbelievable.
Julio was going straight over there, even though he was the only injured one. He was the only one to
love them all.
Also on that as well, the post-match press conferences were very interesting. There was two, of course. There was Undav and Steele, and then there was De Zerbi with the Sky pundits. Now, the De Zerbi Steele was interesting because, of course, they were mentioning, like, they asked him, like, how did you bounce back kind of thing, and they mentioned that De Zerbi showed them a video, an inspirational video of Michael Jordan, which, if anyone's seen The Last Dance, I'm a massive fan of Last Dance. Like, I was addicted to it, and I love basketball anyway, but to see him using Michael Jordan videos, inspiration, is incredible. I think it just shows the mindset of, and also, you know, his comments before, after the Everton game, you know, saying about, you'll see the true Brighton. I think it just shows, I know we've known this for a long time, but not only his character, but I think his mindset of just being wanting to be a winner and doing the best he can to, because he said, I think he came up with a quote saying, I don't mind losing, but if I'm going to lose, I'm going to do it with style, and I'm going to do it with, you know, passion and actually doing it properly. And I don't mind losing, but I want to win, which I just think just encapsulates him. And yeah, Ryan, just sum it up for me in terms of De Zerbi's impact he's had so far, and I'm sure hopefully he'll have in seasons to come.
He's put in everything that we've needed. Everything that Potter couldn't do is what De Zerbi can do. And I think that's what's so significant about him, is that, you know, Potter would have, you know, probably been saying, you know, it's okay, we take this, we move on, it's what it is, you know, that sort of vibe. And whereas you've got De Zerbi saying, no, this ain't good enough. Or, no, we need to do this, we need to do that. And even if we win this game, we need to do better next time because we didn't do that, we didn't do this. And I think that if you've got the mentality to always do better and to accept that when you're at a defeat is a time when you learn, that instantly is going to put you above pretty much everything. And that's always going to, you know, work in not just football, but in everything in life. If you can accept losing as a mistake and that's going to make you improve, then every time that you win is going to be one that you're going to want to do better than. That is the best combination of winning mentality that you can physically have as a human being in this world. And that is everything that De Zerbi's put into this squad that Graham Potter couldn't do. And to be honest with you, it's testament to him, it's testament to Bloom, it's testament to the players as well for buying into it. Because you've got to give credit to the players, which, you know, they've been through it all this season. Everything, these fans have been through it all too. And to be, you know, going through such lows of losing what was such a great moment in that beginning of the season. Because you forget how good it was when Graham Potter's doing that to the North.
After the Leicester game. Yeah, the Leicester. I remember it. The Leicester game was just mad. Like, after that game, we all thought we're going on a European tour. Like, things are, life's sweet. And then 2 days later, or 3 days later, he's off to Chelsea. And it's like, life's awful. The season's dead. Yeah. But then, Ben, De Zerbi came in. And I suppose from that moment, really, everything just sort of, it was a bit of a rocky start because he had a tough few games, didn't he? He had Liverpool, he had like a really tough start.
Yeah, did we draw to?
Yeah, I think
we drew to Forest at home, didn't we?
That's it, yeah. Forest, and he also had a bit of a rocky start, but then he sort of rocketed after that. And yeah, what's been your thoughts on De Zerbi's revolution?
No, it's just incredible. It's just such a breath of fresh air having a manager like that, that can put his, like, well, he can put his money where his mouth is that the saying? Just the what his words for last on Monday, when he's saying you'll see the real Brighton, not only being against Arsenal as well, by the way, where it could easily have backfired, but he's just ballsy, like all of his celebrations on his the field, like the unreal. Knee sliding on the Emirates is just the disrespect is class. I absolutely love it. And you see all the Arsenal fans that were still in the stand, like giving it to him and calling him a wanker or whatever. But yeah, that's just the manager as a fan. You want to see. A fan that represents you, and I feel like he represents the fans so well because he looks like a fan on the pitch, the way he always reacts.
It means something to him, you know.
Yeah,
he gives me proper Mourinho vibes as well. Like, gives me not as much of a villain as Mourinho, and maybe not as like cocky. Because he's still like, when I was watching him, his interviews really humble. Like, he doesn't seem to like crack many jokes and stuff. And maybe it's the language barrier. I'm sure.
No, he does.
Maybe with time. He does. Maybe I haven't seen enough. Like, but from the one yesterday from Sky, he seemed very like very humble. You know, like they were saying to him, like, you know, bigging him up and stuff. But he was like very level headed. He seemed very humble. But then you see him on the sidelines. He's so passionate and he's so just endearing. I think he's brilliant. I love him. Like, I love him.
Also, nice his man management. I think that goes under the radar because, like, the way he's dealt with so many different players this season, Yeah, more recently, point. Sanchez, I think that's the one we probably should say. I think
yes,
before the match leading up to the game, Sanchez asked if he was going to be featured or something like that. Zerbe said no. And then they agreed that Sanchez didn't have to travel with the team,
yeah.
Which is, I don't know, does that say that he will be going in the summer? Probably. If you're asking to not turn up, like that's what you get paid to do. Even if you're not going to play, you can turn up because that's literally your job. So it's a strange one. Even if De Zerbi gave him his blessings to do so, maybe there was a reason. But I don't, from what I've read at the screenshot of The Athletic, it didn't seem like there wasn't any reason.
The vibes I'm getting from Sanchez is that he wants to be a starter, but he's not willing to fight for it. That's the kind of vibes. I could be well off here. I could be wrong. But that's just the vibes I get from him. It's like it's like an entitlement from him. He's like, I should be number one, but he doesn't feel like he has to battle for it. Would you agree with that, Ryan? Or do you think it's something different, maybe?
I don't know Robert Sanchez, so I don't know. But I don't know. If De Zerbi's not putting him in, it's whatever reason he thinks that Steele's better. I think that Steele's definitely been playing better recently. So I think there's nothing you can really do about it. You can look at Everton, which was a poor game. Sanchez had a good game at Wembley. So it's weird, you know. But I think, you know, he prefers Steele. So what happens? Sanchez doesn't want to stay, doesn't want to be number two, wants to leave. I don't really blame him. I'd probably do the same. You know, if you're a goalkeeper, young goalkeeper, you want to play. You know, he's a good player, don't get me wrong. So you're going to want to go. I'd imagine he probably does, is my take. So is what it is.
He doesn't seem like the character that wants to be a number two.
I was about to say, I can't see him being number two at all. Like, no. Yeah, it's either number one or I'm out, basically.
Yeah. And I can't blame him. You know, I'd do the same.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. I think it shows his mentality as well. Like, he wants to be number one, but does he have the drive to get there? I suppose that's a different conversation to have. But then final 2 points, boys, before we wrap up. Let's start with Duncan Colwell, because, yeah, we bigged them up throughout, Elite. Like, here and there. But as a partnership, they were brilliant yesterday. Really, really good. Really solid. I think Colwell had one of his best games. I think Dunk had a few... What was it? I think he had one misplaced pass in the first half where I thought, it was a bit dodgy. He had a few. But, he's Mr. Brighton. He's solid. He's Mr. Reliable. You 9 times out of 10. But, yeah, let's start with you, Ben. That partnership, do you think Cole will be here next season? Which I think we can all probably know the answer to that. But, and if he will be, do you think Dunk and Cole are the centre-back pairing to take us into potentially Europe?
Oh, I don't know. I think there's a balance between the Duncan Webster and the Duncan Colwell. I like them both, but for different reasons. It always goes down to whether Dunk plays well as well. I think we've mentioned it before. When Dunk plays well, his partner plays well as well. It's never really different. Like we wouldn't have Webster carrying Dunk, for example. It's usually the other way around. Well, not the other way around, but
that Levi can carry Dunk as well. I think he's got more capacity to carry Dunk, but at the same time, Webster was really good as well. In that 6-0 and the 1-0. So I think
it's Man United.
It's a bit of a toss up for me. But I think the ceiling of Colwell is exceptionally high. I think it's higher than anyone that's been at this club before. I think he could be like, you know, serious player. And we said that right at the beginning. So I think you've got to stay. If you get Colwell on a permanent, he's got to start alongside Dunk, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
They've just been, they were brilliant yesterday. I thought they were colossal. And then the final thing, again, going back to De Zerbi's post-match sort of comments, he did say, his quote was along the lines of, we have to be prepared to lose Caicedo and McAllister going into the next season. Now, we all knew that was going to happen. It was pretty much expected. It's not like it's shocking news. But I think to hear it from De Zerbi's mouth and sort of basically solidify what we all knew, I think that's the impact of those comments. We've touched on it already. Do you think... I'll start on this one. I think Caicedo will be a much bigger loss than McAllister by a country mile, just because of what he adds to the team and, you know, the system we play, all those kind of things. And McAllister, I think, Ben, you touched on it earlier as well. Like, is he a bit inflated just because of the World Cup performances? Not to say he isn't a great player. But Ryan, if they were to go, who would you want to see replace them? It can be from this current squad or even potentially outside of this squad?
Oh mate, I don't know. And this is why I'm not. And this is why I'm not a recruitment.
Some random bloke in the Belgian league, probably.
Yeah, like, as much as I'd love to say this and this and this and this, I don't think it's really for me to do, because I think that whoever the club are going to bring in, I'm going to trust it. I think Dahoud is a good signing. I think if you're going to get, you know, sort of 15, 20 games out of him, because his injury record isn't great, he's going to be good for backup. You're going to have James Milner obviously coming in for backup too. I think apparently Dahoud is capable of also starting, you know, a lot of games if he can stay fit. From what I've heard from Dortmund fans is that he's, you know, a very, 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 very good quality player. He's like a Pascal Gross, as in he's very, very technical, creates a lot of chances, you know, that sort of player. But his injury record, you know? So I think if we've got someone else, I don't know. Yassin, I think, is very capable. I think Billy Gilmore's very good. But I do think that Billy Gilmore isn't Caicedo. I think Billy Gilmore's Billy Gilmore. I think he's a bit of more of a... He's closer to a 6 than an 8, and I couldn't see him being an 8. Whereas Ayari, I could see him being an 8. You know, possibly could cover 6. I think João Pedro, whether he becomes a 10 for us, I don't know, because I haven't seen him play for us yet. But I reckon that he's got the versatility to become one, knowing Deserbi. Depends on who we bring in.
From what I think Watford's fans were saying, that he can do a job in 10. So, I mean, he can do it on the wing as well. Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if he can do that 10 role.
And also, if it's what the casuals say, I'm sure Deserbi will make Carl Pedro a well beater as well as all the other players. Sure.
He'll probably add him to another 5 positions. Like, he'll be able to play left, right, central, midfield.
Bingo.
By the end of the next season, he'll be able to play at least all of them. I guarantee it. I'm going to call it now.
Hello. Sorry about that, boys. I was having technical issues.
You dipped out.
I just couldn't get my mic off mute. So, boys, what an incredible result at the Emirates. The three-peat at the Emirates. It is our dance floor, I didn't want to say it, but...
Thank you, Roberto, for giving us...
We get so many good results there. Amazing.
Yeah, we've had some incredible results. And more importantly, to round this off... We've got such huge games coming up now. We've got four more games to go. We've got Newcastle next, which we will be doing a preview for, which will be coming out very soon on YouTube. Prior to the game. So it's a very important, and it could go down to the very last day against Aston Villa. We didn't want to say it, but potentially for Europe, Villa could be a huge game. But if we keep getting results like the one we did yesterday, then we don't even need to rely on Villa.
Qualify by Sunday. By Sunday.
Exactly. So let's just four
more games left, and Tottenham and Villa, who are behind us by 1 point, have only got 2 more games left. And obviously, our games are very tough.
Don't give them content. Give the people content.
True.
We need the ad money. What do you mean? Yeah. We make so much money off this channel. We need to make as much as we can.
So much money. Right, boys. Comments down below.
Three-peat.
It's got to be either. Sorry.
Three-peat.
That's a basketball reference. Brian doesn't.
Oh, right. Okay. I've watched basketball.
It's like repeat. It's like repeat, but three-peat.
Yeah, it's like three-peat.
I get it.
Four-peat, five-peat.
I get it.
Maybe something to do with Roberto, because I think that he's deserved some credit a little bit.
Forza Roberto. There you go.
Forza Roberto. Thank you, Roberto. Anything along them lines.
Yeah, take your pick.
Take your pick. Let's go. Italian. A little bit multilingual on the channel, boys. But as per usual, please do like, comment, and subscribe. It really does mean a lot to us. I've actually noticed, this is a little... To people who've made it this far, you people watching on YouTube, I haven't noticed our likes are actually really super low in comparison to the views we get. So please.
So what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing? Please.
We've got to say this at the beginning.
I know. But we're...
Plug at the beginning.
Yeah, we should. We're too humble.
The thing is, we're all about the content. We're not like hungry boys, are we? We don't go out there and be like, can you just please like my stuff?
Exactly. We're all about the content. But
we only leave our likes on Tinder, don't we, boys?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. We're taking men. Me and Brian.
Oh, yeah, you actually are, to be fair.
Right, boys, absolute pleasure. Please like, comment, and subscribe. And of course, keep streaming it on Apple and Spotify, all that good stuff. And we shall see you for the preview of Newcastle. And then we should see you, obviously, for the post match of Newcastle. Peace out.
Peace.
away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.